Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everybody. We're delighted to have Jennifer with us this evening. A little bit about Jennifer, if you don't know about her. She's a Princeton graduate, graduated with honors. Began writing, I guess, and this is her own description, self-absorbed novels or pieces about her parents' divorce, and took a friend's advice to get into publishing journalism and worked for newspapers and magazines. And in 2000, I guess, more recent than that, she published her first novel. I'm dating you. I'm sorry. 2001, she published her first novel, Good in Bed, which became a New York Times bestseller. And this tonight, which she has come to share with us, Fly Away Home, is her eighth novel. So please join me in welcoming Jennifer Weiner. Thanks so much.
I once did a bookstore where there was a flood, and they had to move all the books and take up all the carpet and hold the reading in what was essentially the garage. It had a concrete floor with a drain in the middle, and I kept waiting for Jeffrey Dahmer to appear. And the bookstore owner, he was having a rough time with it. He walked through the crowd. He was so apologetic to me. He kept saying, "I'm so sorry. We've never done a reading here before, and this is terrible. I feel so bad." And, you know, I, of course, the oldest child of divorced parents, am trying to calm him down. I'm like, "Don't worry. It'll be fine. You know, Mom and Dad still love us, even though they can't live together anymore." And this poor man was not consoled, and he just he was just so sorry. And he walks through the crowd, and he stands behind the podium, and he leans into the microphone and says, "Here's Jennifer. Sorry about the smell." Yeah. They usually wait till I'm done before they say that. So you guys didn't eat the cupcakes? What? What? They told... Okay. Here. What kind of nonsense is that?
I will serve as you talk.
Okay, how's that? Yeah, well, geez, Louise. Food police. okay, so we'll get the cupcakes going. I'm glad they're here. This, as you know, is the Cupcakes Across America tour, and I did an event at a library a couple days ago, and there were no cupcakes due to union rules. Yes, because they were like, "Well, if there's cupcakes, there'll be wrappers. If there's wrappers, there'll be a mess. We'll have to pay the custodians overtime, and it's a union issue." Yeah, and I'm like, "Are you serious? Like, cupcakes are fun!" But it was a big problem. So I have this whole speech prepared, but I got a text message. Yes?
Are we obligated now to make a mess?
Are you obligated to make a mess? Please don't, because I actually said I would help clean. So, yeah, no, it's... Jeez. Okay, so my sitter emailed me and said... The memo line of the email was, "Claire stuck in kayak." My mother's lady friend, her special lady. People have different shapes in this world, and I think that kayaks should accommodate that, but they don't always. And she got stuck, right? And I think it was like a cork in a bottle, and evidently my mother was yelling, "Just crawl out, Claire, just crawl out." And the kayak was taking on water, and then it started to sink. And I'm writing back to my sitter, "The reason there is no video of this is because ... And she's like, "I didn't think fast enough." And I'm like, "Come on, why am I on this earth if not to have video of my mother's lady friend getting stuck in a kayak? And then to post it on YouTube." You know, but it's just, what are you going to do? I went on the Rachel Ray Show several weeks ago to promote Fly Away Home, and I brought my mom with me because I like to bring my mom places with me. I'm 40, but that's just how I roll. And it's fun. It really is, because like when you go on book tour and stuff, like you're in these nice hotels, and it's fun to bring my mom to nice hotels because she, like, when we were growing up, like it was all like, you know, four kids, one bed, and the Days Inn. So like, you know, our first four seasons, she gets out of the car and she's like, and my sister is like, observe the animal out of its habitat. My mom is like, you girls, shut up. And then we go to the room, and like my sister takes the Oreos out of my out of the mini bar, and my mom starts yelling at her about how the Oreos cost $4, and for $4 you could go to the Super Fresh and get a whole box of Oreos. And my sister says, the animal is becoming agitated. So yeah, I know, right, Fran? We take videos of her all the time. She's like, girls, cut that out. So we're at the Rosie O'Donnell Show, and we're getting up the stairs into the dressing room, and the security guard says, guess who else is here? And I say, I have no idea. Like, they didn't tell me who else was coming. And he says, Rosie O'Donnell. Okay? So my mom, a gay lesbian woman, telling her that Rosie O'Donnell is in the building is basically like telling a fundamentalist Christian that Jesus is hanging out in the green room having a cupcake. My mother turns to my publicist and says, I have to meet Rosie. Like, my lesbian cred is on the line here. And I have to say that my mom is actually, like, a really bad lesbian. Like, I mean, I don't know how she's doing at the actual, like, lesbianing stuff, but, like, in terms of the cultural signifier, she just gets it all wrong. Like, she brought the triangle pin, but then she pinned it on herself pointing the wrong way. I had to fix it. You know, and then, like, she would call me, like, she decided that once she was gay, she had gaydar. So she'd call me and say things like, hey, guess who's one of us? And I'd say, who's that, Fran? And she'd say, Elton John. And I'd be like, you don't say. But my favorite was when I'd be at work and she'd call me at home and leave messages on my voicemail, and she would say, I'm here, I'm queer, call your mom back. You know, which I really loved, because to me it was like that one, like, burrito of, like, gay pride and Jewish guilt and, like, one little bite-sized nugget. Like, you know, I'm a dyke and you're not calling. Like, there it is. Are any of you guys Jewish, BTW? Like, one, two, three, four. Okay, I need a sense of that. You know, when I start talking about J-date, I need to know who understands. Like, okay, thank you, yes. J-date. J-date. You're from New Jersey. Okay, we're sisters then. We'll talk. We'll catch up later. But, yes, J-date is a, I talk about it sometimes. It's a single site for the unchosen chosen people. You know, the ones who just aren't quite getting it yet. So, all right, so anyhow, we're at the Rachel Ray Show. My mother says to my publicist, you have to introduce me to Rosie. My publicist goes out into the hall with Rosie's publicist, and they are basically, like, they're talking to each other like they are hammering out the articles of the Treaty of Ghent, okay? Or, like, negotiating some kind of, like, mafia sit-down with the five families. Like, I don't even know what is being said, what is being promised, what is being threatened, but finally my publicist comes back and says, okay, Fran, you can go meet Rosie. So I take my mom, and we go down the hall to Rosie O'Donnell's dressing room, and Rosie's in there with her entourage, which you have when you're Rosie O'Donnell, and she's, like, very, like, sort of, you know, like, smaller and prettier than you'd think, and I'm sort of looking at her like, oh my God, it's like, I always have these, like, Chris Farley moments when I meet famous people. You know, it's like, you're Rosie O'Donnell. Like, remember when you had your show? That was cool. So anyhow, she says, you know, hi, I'm Rosie. She looks at me, she says, who are you? And I couldn't remember. It's like, fuck, who am I? And then it came back, thank God, it came back. I'm like, I'm Jennifer Weiner, I'm a novelist, I'm another guest on the show. And she says, you know, you're a novelist, what are your books about? And I said, well, did I offend you with the F word? Are you okay? You're not okay? It's not, you're shrugging? Oh, good, good. You got the same thing my Nana has, the automatic F word shut down. Awesome. That's good. There's vibrator talk later, I'll warn you. All right, so Yeah, so Rosie says to me, what are your books about? And I say, well, my first book is about this young woman, and she's going through this bad breakup, and she's struggling to find her place in the world, and her mother's coming out of the closet. And Rosie turns to Fran and says, you? And Fran says, yes. Rosie says, how old were you? And my mom says, 54, which is true. She was 54 when she met Karen in the swimming pool of the West Hartford JCC, where I have not been back in the water since. I come home and my mom says, hey, Jenny, you want to go swimming? And I say, nope. She says, it's not catching. And I say, they haven't proved that. So she says to Rosie, I was 54. And Rosie says, really? So what, you're sleeping with men for all those years? You're having sex with men and you're thinking, I don't know, this is okay, but there could be more. And I say, or less. My mother says to Rosie O'Donnell, the first time a woman's lips touched mine, I never imagined such bliss. At which point I vomit into my mouth. I don't want to hear about the bliss. Like, come on, like, ew, right? So, like, I leave the two of them. I say, I excuse myself. I go back to my dressing room. I put my Spanx on. It's like a 20-minute process. Guys who don't get that, someone will explain it to you later. And I come back, like, 20 minutes later. They're still talking about sex. It's horrifying. You know, and so they're talking, and I'm trying not to listen. And finally, a producer comes and says, Ms. O'Donnell, we need you on the set right now. And they're walking Rosie down the hall, and she turns to me and calls over her shoulder, send me your books. And then she walks a few more steps and says, actually, I'm rich. I can buy them. Actually kind of proud of myself, because that was like the best I've ever done with like a celebrity encounter. I did a book event a while back with Jeffrey Eugenides, who wrote Middlesex. Middlesex, which like won the National Book Award and won the Pulitzer Prize and was an Oprah pick. And Middlesex is this book about a hermaphrodite. It's about a person who believes she's female, being raised as a girl, turns out has boy parts. But it's like this, it's a great book. It's about America and class and identity and like all this great stuff, and I loved the book. I read it right before I gave birth to my first child, so it's like made this big impression on me, and I'm like, I have to go to Jeffrey Eugenides and tell him what his book has meant. But I decide that I need to have a glass of wine first. And then I have two glasses of wine. Then I have a martini. Then I decide I'm ready. And I walk over to him and I say to him, in what is surely the best opening line ever, I say, you're Jeffrey Eugenides. And he nods. He's this very sort of tall, like reserved man. And I say, I loved your book. He says, thank you. I say, but I have a story I have to tell you. He doesn't look like he wants to hear my story, but there's no stopping me at this point. I say, yeah, I have a girl. And after she was born, I made the doctor look really close to make sure she didn't have a penis. Which is true, BTW. Because, like, that's what happens in the book, right? Like, the pediatrician is this old guy. He just misses it, you know. And so Jeffrey Eugenides is looking at me with this look of horror and disgust. He says, you're kidding, right? I say, oh, no. I say, they gave me the baby, and right? She has 10 fingers and 10 toes. I say, make sure she doesn't have a ball sack. Because I don't want to be the mom who missed it. I think he left the party. But it was true. Like, I worry about these things. Like, because you just don't want to be the mom where, like, you know, years later, they're like, didn't you ever? And like, no, I didn't. And, you know, so anyhow. People often ask me how my family feels about the stories that I tell and the stories that I use in books. And different writers have different attitudes about this. Like, I think the Philip Roth school of literature says you just can't worry about it. You can't think about what great Aunt Minnie is going to do, how she's going to feel, because you are writing for posterity and you're writing for the ages and you just can't concern yourself. And like, my whole thing is, I don't know where Philip Roth goes for the holidays, but like, I gotta go home, so I gotta make sure everybody's okay with things. And so like, my deal is that people get to read my stuff in galleys, and if I'm gonna talk about them, I tell them ahead of time, and everybody's got a good sense of humor and everybody's cool. The one exception is my mom's partner Claire's sister Carla. Yes. Carla has a thing for amputees. Okay? She has dated 3 different guys with 3 hands between them. Not even kidding. And I, you know, like you go to visit their parents' house and you're like looking through the photo albums and it's like, you know, an illustrated history of prosthetics. Because there's like the guy in the 80s with the hook, you know, and then there's the guy in the 90s with like the fake hand. And, you know, you're sort of looking at all this. And like, I have lots of questions about this. Like, first and foremost, where does one meet a series of amputees? Like, was she hanging around outside the prosthetic shop, like waiting for a guy? And when she saw someone, was she like, hey, handsome, need a hand? It's terrible, but like, where do you meet? You know, I just didn't understand it. And so like for years, I was like, Carla, what is the deal? And she's like, I'm not telling you what the deal is because you're going to put it in a book. And I'm like, well, yeah. Like, I'm sorry, but if God gives you some like bizarre sexual fetish, like I can't not use it. Like, that's the deal. That's how it works. Like, did you not get the memo? Like, that's what writers do. But Carla was obstinate. And for years, she was just like, I'm not discussing this with you. Until finally, one night, we were at a clam shack. And she's like, I'll tell you if you swear you'll never use it in print. I'm like, yeah, okay, no problem. And she's like, no, you have to swear. And there were brown paper tablecloths. So she wrote a contract on the tablecloth and made me sign it in crayon. And then she said, well, Jen, it's a sex thing. At which point I realized there are some things I don't want to know. Because I was just like, okay, is it like a vulnerability thing? Or is it like something they're actually doing with what's left? I just don't know. I don't want to know. I just didn't want to go there. And so I swore I'd never use it in a book, and I never have. Ever. But it's just interesting, because she married a guy who's got everything, as far as I can see. You know, like, but... both hands, both legs. You know, it's interesting. You know, and then last night I was telling the story at a signing, and it got a little dirtier than it just did because there's this guy in the front row, and I'm a little afraid of him. you look like my English teacher, Mr. Archibald, who I'm assuming isn't proud of what I've become. And but so this woman comes up to get her book signed, and she's like, I have to tell you, my husband is an amputee. And I was just like, oh, no. I was making jokes about fisting. And I'm like, but you didn't date a whole bunch. She's like, no, it was just a coincidence. And I'm like, so, like, what's with that? She's like, I don't know. But it's evidently a thing. Like, there's websites. Like, you know, so anyhow, yeah, right. This is Fly Away Home, and I'm so happy because, yes, the cover only sort of looks like a douche ad. Okay, actually, it looks exactly like a douche ad. Who am I kidding? This girl is jumping in the air because she's thrilled to not have that not-so-fresh feeling anymore. Does anybody have best friends forever? Can you hold that up? Like, right, okay. Like, turn it around so everybody can see, right? So two girls walking on the beach, and the one in white looks like she's picking her swimsuit out of her butt crack. And, right, my publisher sent it to me, and they're like, what do you think? And I'm like, I think it looks like a douche ad. And they're like, it doesn't look like a douche ad. I'm like, yeah, it looks like a douche ad. And it also looks like that girl's picking a wedgie, which like, I'm okay with. You know, like, if you're known for, like, your realistic depiction of female characters, like, that's what women do on the beach, you know? Like, I bought one of those Land's End tugless tanks. I tugged. But I really like shopping in the Land's End catalog because they give you shapes that, like, correspond with shit that's wrong with you. Like, you know, like, if it's a circle, it's like you're sort of, like, round all over. And if it's, like, the triangle this way, then you're busty. And if it's a triangle that way, you're hippie. And if it's a circle with a slash through it, your shit's just all fucked up and you shouldn't even try. You know, they just, like, send you a burqa. And they're like, try cold showers. Like, don't even go to the beach. Like, just don't. But, you know, so, like, with this one, you know, I was just, like, because, like, I fought the douche battle, and, you know, they were like, well, the bookstores really like it, you know, like, they think buyers are going to really like it. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe we could do, like, some, you know, like, cross-packaging with Massengill and, like, you know, like, buy one, get one. Kind of thing. Right, Massengill, your best friend forever. Exactly, right? But I seriously, like, with that one, it was like the two girls on the beach. It's like, best friend, do you ever worry? Like, it's... I know, it's bad. But so this book is about, this is my little attempt at ripped from the headlines fiction. It's about a cheating politician, go figure, and his wife, who has to, like, stand up and do the press conference with him. And their adult daughters and how they sort of deal with the scandal. And what happened was this last 18 months, it's been like one after another, and I'm fascinated with all of them. Like, I remember watching the Eliot Spitzer press conference, and I'm sure some of you guys do too. Okay, so here's Eliot Spitzer, governor of New York, you know, presumably an intelligent guy, and he's up there on stage with his wife confessing to spending $5,000 on an escort, right? So I'm watching this and I'm thinking, what is somebody doing that's worth $5,000? Should I be doing the thing that's worth $5,000? Like, what is the male equivalent of the $5,000 thing? Because for me, it would be like, make sweet love to you, then do your taxes, right? Like... You know, it was just so funny, like, with the Tiger Woods sex scandal. Like, I refer to it in the book as, like, the clown car. Like, you open the door, and then, like, one woman gets out, then another one, another one, another one, another one. But do you remember the sexts, like, the sexy text messages that I thought were the least sexy things ever? Like, he's typing to this woman. He says, he writes, I am going to wear you out. And I'm like, oh, that sounds terrible. Like, I'm worn out already. Guy who's like, I'm going to wear you out. I want a guy who's like, I'm bringing a pint of Ben and Jerry's. Let's watch The Simpsons. Like, that's... that, to me, is sexy. But, like, the whole, like, it was just... The whole thing was, like, the Spitzer thing was freaky. Like, the sex for money thing is just, like, confounding to me. Like, I just... Because the rate of exchange is the thing I don't understand. And I have a friend who's traveled extensively in Thailand and who told me about this brothel that he knew of, which I think meant went to, but I didn't push. And it was like six stories high, and the deal was, as you ascended this building, with each level, the women became more lovely and more talented and more expensive. Right? So I'm hearing this story, and of course, the place that my mind goes is the job audition, right? And because I'm imagining myself, like, showing up with my resume, and the madam, like, looking at me and being like, you first floor woman! And being like, oh, come on, I have a great personality! You know, like, I try hard. You know, and then I'm like, how does it work? Like, okay, is it, are there handicap ramps? Okay, like, what if you want a sixth floor woman but can only get to the first floor? Do they bring somebody down for you? And then I'm like, do women ever get demoted, right? Like, if you have a rough weekend and, you know, there's Krispy Kremes and you come in and the you know, the madam, like, looks at you and is like, you know, like, it's just, you know. And then there's John Edwards. And let me tell you, if you are trying to write a book about a political sex scandal, John Edwards is not what you need, okay? Because, like, I was trying to, like, craft this satire. I was trying to write about a sex scandal that was so, like, obviously over the top that I was clearly in the realm of invention, right? So, like, I was trying to have my guy, like, he was meeting, my senator was meeting women through the casual encounter section of Craigslist. And I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. Like, oh my God, this is so, like, over the top, and who'd ever think? And then, like, you open up Newsweek the next day, and it's like, okay, so John Edwards has confessed to impregnating his mistress slash videographer. He's gotten another staffer, who I believe is gay in love with him, to claim that he's the father. He's stashed them all in a safe house in California. Oh, and there's a sex tape. And I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to do now? John Edwards. Ugh. You know, and then the thing that struck me about that was, like, all these guys have daughters, like, that are in their 20s, and I'm just thinking, like, if you are the daughter of John Edwards, like, probably likely you're going to see the sex tape. Like, you're going to know it's there. Someone's going to send it to you. Like, you're going to feel like Pandora's box. You've got to open it. And I just imagine this poor girl being like, oh, Dad, pants, pants. You know, but it's like, it just felt like this was the season of sort of like everybody cheating. And I remember, like, I was able to get it in just under the wire, the Sandra Bullock, Jesse James thing. And just, to me, this was just like, okay, you are Jesse James. You're, like, tattooed, roughneck, chopper guy. And you're married to Sandra Bullock, who, by all accounts, is lovely and talented and won the Academy Award. And you're cheating on her with a woman with a tattooed forehead. And her bangs only mostly cover it up. You know, my friend Susan and I have this conversation all the time, and the example that she goes back to is Halle Berry, when she was married to Dave Justice, and Dave Justice was cheating on her. And it's like, if you're Halle Berry and you are getting cheated on, like, there is just no damn hope for the rest of us. Because, like, I mean, Halle Berry, she is Catwoman. You don't cheat on Catwoman. And then, like, the Al Gore, right? Okay, I did not see that coming. That's what she said. You. You're still scaring me. You're not laughing enough. But I mean, okay, first of all, if you are booking a 3-hour massage, it's not going to end well, right? Who has even heard of a 3-hour massage? Like, there's just not enough parts to rub. Shit's going to go wrong. I bought the National Enquirer, and I'm, like, reading all the stuff that she says he did, and I can't picture it. I just can't. I can picture him, like, holding her down and being like, we are going to talk about your carbon footprint. Like, that... that I can see, but I can't see the sex stuff. Like, I just... I mean, the Appalachian Trail guy, he was a horn dog. Like, that, I looked at him, and I'm like, mm-hmm. But that thing, like, did you love that one? Like, okay, he's saying, like, okay, his staff does not know where he is. They think he is hiking the Appalachian Trail. The Appalachian Trail is like, keep me the fuck out of this, right? And then it turns out he is not hiking the Appalachian Trail. He is visiting his Argentinian mystery woman. And that was so hard for me because, like I said, I turned 40 this year, and, like, with 40 comes, like, many painful realizations. For me, the foremost of which was, I am never going to be anybody's Argentinian mystery woman. Being neither Argentinian nor mysterious. But that was rough. All right, so I'm going to read to you briefly, very briefly, from Fly Away Home, and then I want to take questions, which is always the most fun part. So, section I'm reading, Sylvie Surfer is my heroine, and when we read the scene, she's found out about the affair, she has endured the obligatory press conference, and then she has left him. She's left her husband, she's moved back into the family home in Connecticut, and she's in a grocery store for the first time in, like, years and years and years, because she hasn't been grocery shopping, because her nutritionist orders her food. Back to the meat aisle for another chicken. Over to the bakery for corn muffins and cinnamon rolls. Not as good as Seal's, but they looked okay, and an okay corn muffin was still a good thing. Wasn't that what men said about sex? Or was it pizza? That even bad pizza's still good? Bad pizza. Probably that was what she was to Richard, the cheap freezer-burned stuff you'd pull out from the back of the shelf when you were ravenous and desperate enough not to care. Maybe that girl, that Joelle, had been fresh-baked right out of the oven, the cheese hot and stretchy, the dough soft and yielding. Sylvie grabbed a round loaf of raisin challah and put on her glasses to peer at the price tag when she noticed a young woman in a Nike visor staring at her. Sylvie dropped her eyes. Then she raised her chin, her jaw set defiantly. Can I help you? Excuse me, the woman began. I was wondering. Sylvie cut her off. Yes, she said, I am. The woman stared. Sylvie decided some amplification was necessary. I'm Sylvie Woodruff. I'm Richard Woodruff's wife. And no, I did not know he was sleeping with that girl. And no, I haven't decided if I'm divorcing him. And in case you were wondering, we still had what I consider to be a perfectly acceptable sex life. And we loved each other. Her eyes were filling with tears. We have two beautiful girls, Diana and Lizzie. Diana's a doctor. She's married. And Lizzie, well, Lizzie's had some problems, but I think she's doing better now, unless this completely derails her, which I worry about. I worry that it will, and I'm furious at my husband for jeopardizing her. She swallowed the word recovery and swiped at her cheek with her sleeve. I guess what I have to figure out is, can I forgive him? Can I trust him again? And after something like this, I don't know. I just don't. I'm sorry, the woman whispered. Sylvie held the bread tightly, the way she'd held her daughters when they were babies. Sorry, she repeated. Yeah, I'm sorry, too. I'm sorry I didn't see it coming. I thought I had a happy marriage. We said I loved you every night. We never went to sleep angry. But you don't know. This could happen to anyone. Like getting struck by lightning, it could happen to anyone. Her voice was hoarse and loud. She could feel herself sweating as her fingertips sank through the plastic and into the bread. Nobody likes to think it, but it could happen to anyone. This was not technically true. She supposed it happened more frequently with powerful men who had ample opportunity. But at that moment, with her heart thundering in her ears and sweat rolling down her back, it felt true. Like a natural disaster, an earthquake, a tsunami, and her only mistake was that she'd been in the way. Anyone, she repeated. The woman finally opened her mouth. I parked next to a Camry with its lights on, and I wondered if that was your car. Oh. Well, that could happen to anyone, too, Sylvie said, feeling her face burn as the woman backed away. I'm sorry for your troubles, the woman whispered. Can I help you? Get someone for you? Or, oh, no, said Sylvie, her old social graces taking over. No, I'm not myself right now. She tried to give a, my, isn't this an amusing misunderstanding, laugh, but it sounded like a sob. Really, I'm fine. The woman nodded, managed a weak smile, and fled in the direction of ethnic foods. Sylvie stood for a moment, her hands resting on the shopping cart. That had not gone well. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.